Hi, I'm Phil Palucha from Billionaires in Boxers, and you are set to watch or listen to Leslie Nace. Fantastic interviews, incredible insights. Stay tuned.
Welcome to The Client Whispers. I'm your host, Leslie Nace. In this series, I interview entrepreneurs about the importance of communicating, both in the physical and spiritual realm. What inspiration guided them on the path to success in their business and personal life? Stay tuned and find out. Welcome to Client Whispers, where intuition is the heart of innovative business. I want to know how creative, successful business people and thought leaders follow their dreams and make a difference in the lives of others. And did intuition play a part in their success? Well, my guest today is Stuart Elliott. Stuart has been dubbed a soul whisperer. Can't wait to hear that one. Who guides professionals to be confident, courageous, and capable at navigating changes they encounter in their personal and professional lives. Once they do, and they sweep away all the baggage that's been holding them back, they're able to connect to what their soul is trying to tell them. This gives them the space and freedom to truly start to love themselves. It's a beautiful thing to help someone do. So Stuart says that there is no greater joy than seeing the heartfelt smile break out on a person's face as they connect to their inner greatness and express something like, wow, it feels as though I've been reborn into who I always was meant to be. So without further delay, we're going to get it straight from Stuart. Welcome, Stuart.
Yeah, thank you, Leslie. And it is a pleasure and an honor to be here. So I'm very grateful for you because I'm of the opinion that we've all got stories. We've all got some little nugget of wisdom that we've experienced or something we've experienced. And we never know how that's going to impact somebody for the better. And the more we share, the more opportunities for that right person to hear that right little bit and maybe save their life, but definitely change their life.
So beautifully said. So beautifully said. So let's start a little bit on how did you come to being the soul whisperer and, you know, doing the work that you do today?
It's a long story because it's basically my life. And, you know, you were talking about intuition. When I was very young, maybe about 7 or 8 or 9, I've got a sister who's 2 years younger than me. And she used to love show jumping, watching show jumping on TV. And I used to love watching it with her because I was able to antagonize her because I could see every single horse that was going to knock the fences down way before they did it. And she hated it, but I loved it because, you know, we're brother and sister, so we do these things. So intuition's been with me, but it's not something that consciously I've always taken note of. And I would suggest that it is that part of me, and it was part of my calling because I was born in the UK and then I moved to Africa. I did an overland tour through Africa, and it took about 6 months. That was back in 86. We drove from South Africa back to the UK, and as I got off the ferry, I said, no, I'm going back. And 3 months later, I was back, and I lived there for 20 years, and then things fell apart, and then I moved to the south of China. I was offered an opportunity to come teach English as a second language here. And for some reason, I was always the most popular teacher. I had the highest scores. I had the highest class retention rates. And, you know, students just loved it. And I didn't really understand what I was doing. It's not, I'm not a career teacher per se. I didn't, you know, anything else. I did the TESOL certificates and studies teaching English as a second language. But somewhere along the way, I connected to something, some part of me that made the students, you know, have fun and learn.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was part of the journey. And the last school I worked at, was for young adults and students who were getting ready to go and study at university overseas. And because they were, number one, maturer, and number two, they had a higher level of English, each lesson became coaching sessions. They started sharing problems, and English was the medium for us to communicate. So they were learning English, but they were learning to express and communicate in English. And they basically made these changes, and that's where the smile statement comes from, because they did. They just suddenly broke out into this smile that was so profound, and it was just such a rewarding thing. So I said, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And from there, you know, I've just carried on.
Yeah. I'm wondering, and along your line, I mean, you're teaching in Asia, basically, and did you find the Asian country, and I'm asking this because of my own trip to Japan when I was about 17, 18 years old, and I spent 6 weeks with a host family there, that the daughters of the family, I was with the middle child, but they were all very geared toward what their future was, what their schooling was, very disciplined in what they were. And I love the fact that you're talking about, you know, they had this, you had this conversation in English, and it just like opened them up. Is that something you found in your students as well?
They are geared towards education, definitely, and everything is there. But they're still, especially in the more rural areas of China, there's still a mindset that girls should get to about 24, 25, 26 and get married and produce a grandchild. So they're not always expected to have the career that the husbands are. But, you know, the whole philosophy is you go and you study hard right from primary school, and then you go to a good middle school, you study, 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 you go to a good upper middle school, then you study, get to a good university, and then you get a good job, and then you get a good car, a good house, and so it goes on. So there's a big focus there, and I did ask one of the students once, and I said to him, so what about fun, what about enjoying life? And he was like, what? That's not even part of the equation. And he thought about it, and he said, well, maybe when we retire. And to me, that is a big, big, big challenge, because there's so much pressure to perform academically. And there's, you know, one student even told me, he said, we're not students, we're not people, we're study machines.
Wow.
So there is that pressure on people, and it does seem to be an Asian thing, you know, throughout Korea, Japan, Singapore, you know, all the Asian countries, and obviously China as well. And there's a big, big focus on it. And parents put a lot of pressure because they think there's so much competition, so that the students have to get all these high scores. Sometimes, I mean, 100% in an exam is a failure. You know, right. It should be 150%. Yeah. It's crazy in some ways.
So I appreciate that, because I think that's, you know, it's just not an Asian thing. I know that in the States there are times where there are certain education standards for certain families are the same way, and that studying and really paying attention to that is important. But then I go back to that part of, you know, the soul whisper, and when you would start to connect with them. How did you start to break through on some of that? Was there a certain method that you used or still use to this day?
Well, part of the journey in my teaching was trying to discover why I was so, you know, popular and effective as a teacher. And back in 2012, I went to the UK to study NLP under John Grinder. And then a bit later that year, I studied Ericksonian conversational hypnotherapy. And those are very, very powerful tools to help people move on and make progress in their life. But somewhere along that journey in that year, I said, now I know what I'm doing.
Good. And just for our viewers who may not know, Oops, sorry. Yeah. Just so that they don't know NLP, would you tell them what that is, please?
It's called it's neuro-linguistic programming is the official word, but it is basically a modality for helping you to tap into your unconscious. And John Grinder and Richard Bandler distilled it from Ericksonian hypnotherapy back in the 70s. And it is very, very, a very powerful tool to help people to get past blocks, to see things in a different way, to reframe things, just like hypnotherapy is. And it is something that a lot of people use the modalities, without realizing or understanding what they're doing. But once you understand what is happening, then you're able to use it more purposefully and intentionally and help people make the changes that they've been looking for. And that's what happened to me. I mean, with the students, I suddenly said, now I know why I'm so popular, why I've got such good class results. And I was able to, you know, work with it rather than just have it be, you know, in the background, coming along naturally. And obviously refine things, et cetera, et cetera. But again, it is a tool. And I would suggest that even teaching, but everything starts with listening. Right. To actually be quiet and really hear and connect to what the person is saying underneath the words. Feel the energy. Work with the energy they're giving you. Because words are just labels. Mm-hmm. And we forget as individuals that I might say chair, and you've got a picture of the chair you're sitting on in your mind. So that's the chair that we're talking about, but it's not the chair I'm talking about. My chair, I live in India. I've got a bed of nails as a chair. That's my chair. But we're talking about the same thing, but it's a mm-hmm. different thing totally. But the word, the label, is a convenient metaphor, if you like, for us to communicate at a reasonable level. But there's a problem with that, is that we assume that the other person sees the chair we're sitting on.
Right.
We don't take the time to understand how they're picturing our words, and that's a big problem with communication, you know, in every area of life. And we, you know, a lot of people don't even think it's their responsibility to make sure that the other person understands which chair we're talking about. It's the other person to understand my chair. And that's not true. It's, you know, you've got a message to deliver. You've got to deliver it in a way that other people can understand it. That's your responsibility.
There's
a beautiful example of that.
Okay.
No, I was just going to say that it just came to me now that when one of the classes I had a few students, and one of them was a boy about 8 years old. It was a fairly small class. And he just couldn't understand anything about what I was trying to teach. And I was locked into my own nonsense at the time. So I tried to tell him the same thing in the same way, but just a little bit more, with a bit more energy, a bit more forcefully. And I kept doing this, and he kept closing down and closing down and closing down. Mm-hmm. And eventually I got so frustrated with myself that I said, he's stupid, forget it, he's not going to do it. And I said that internally, I didn't say it to him. And I basically ignored him for the rest of the class. And then after the class, I reviewed it as I normally do. And I said, you know what, Stuart? He's not stupid. You're acting stupid. He's told you many, many times he doesn't understand how you're telling him, how you're trying to explain it to him. And you just ignored what he said. So the next class I went to, I came and taught the same thing, but from a totally different perspective. And his eyes lit up. He was the happiest person in the world. He understood it. Because mm-hmm. I'd changed the way I delivered my message to suit what he needed to hear. And he'd been telling me that all along, but I wasn't listening.
Right.
So what a beautiful lesson from an 8-year-old boy to a teacher.
Yeah. Now, I hear you on that. I have a very similar story of when I used to teach, especially when it came to teaching mathematics. There are some concepts when you get into fifth and sixth and seventh grade that are just, some students are just not ready for them. So I may teach mm-hmm. it up on the board. And as I was teaching, I was always looking to see who got it in the class. because I also knew that if I then asked them to come up and explain it with a different problem, they were going to put it in language that their peers understood. And it that kind of strategy then gave me the chance to go, aha, you know, that I'm listening to what that language was. So, yeah, that's when you're a teacher and just in general, I think you've got a lot to say there as far as the language is concerned, that the chair is not a chair in the same symbol as everyone else sees it. We definitely have different perspectives.
Because we're not only the teacher, we're also the student, and the students are our teachers. And if we listen to them and we're open enough, then we can both grow together and you know, have such beautiful classes.
That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Now, do you still work with students?
No, I decided that it was more rewarding to work with individuals and help them change, because so many people have, should we say baggage is a convenient term, but they have things that they carry around with them and it limits them. I mean, if you think of a young child, when it decides to walk, it never ever thinks that it can't walk. It just decides, I'm going to do it. And yet as we get older and older and older, we have more limitations placed on us. And we change from possibility to I can't.
Yeah.
So that limits us in so many ways. And, you know, my greatest joy is to see people discover that freedom.
So tell us about the work that you do now. Who do you do it with? And I know that you have on your website, I've seen that, a particular four-step process. So tell us all about that.
Well, I work more with women because, number one, they seem to be more open to me. I found that with the students, it was more the girls who were prepared to discuss and share the things. And I think that is a trait in the female population, where they've got this ability to be open and to explore, whereas guys are more locked down, you know, we don't have problems type of thing, especially the older generations. And they've naturally gravitated towards me. And basically, it is about listening and really hearing what they're saying to you energetically as well as with words, and getting underneath the words to find out what really is the problem. And obviously, hypnosis, mindfulness, positive psychology, NLP, these are just tools. Mm-hmm. But it starts with the hearing. And once someone's heard, and they know they're being really heard, then they're able to go inside more and start exploring their own, you know, blockages. So it's a two-way conversation in that respect. And they are able to change things sometimes without even having to know exactly what caused it.
Right.
And that is a big, big, big thing, because a lot of people spend all the time and energy, why? But it's not important why all the time. It's more important, okay, it's happened. I can't change it. Let me move forward.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's basically what I do. I mean, it doesn't mean I won't and I can't work with gentlemen, but it's the criteria is the person has to be ready and recognize that they've got to make a change. And sometimes that's a major life event. Sometimes it's a midlife crisis. Sometimes, you know, a job, you know, they've got a lot of a company takeover or something like that, and there's a lot of changes going on, and that threatens the status quo, because we like that comfort, we like that regularity most of the time. And if something comes to threaten it, well, that brings in the unknown, doesn't it? And that's a scary thing, the unknown.
And we've had a lot of the unknown.
Yep. We have. And, you know, unknown is interesting, because even something you plan, like for me going to Africa, I decided I'm going to go, that can bring up a lot of scariness, because that's a whole unknown journey. But fortunately for me, it was, okay, yeah, I'm taking it on because I'm excited, I'm prepared to. But not everybody is. They start having second thoughts because something kicks in. And it is about that conversation and really hearing what they say. I can't stress that enough. I mean, so many people are hearing the conversation to answer the conversation. And that's a shame, because they're not listening properly to what's really coming out.
Right. That's so true. Yeah. I'll tell you, when you talked about moving to Africa and then driving back to the UK, my mind went, What was that road trip like? You know, I'm thinking how big the continent of Africa is, and you're in South Africa and you drove all the way back up to the UK. I was like, that must have been some journey.
It was part of, I think I would suggest it was part of an awakening. I mean, there's so many different incidences. I've had lions sniffing around the tent at nighttime. I've had a beautiful conversation with a wild elephant. I've had another wild elephant sniff me from head to toe from a few inches away. I've had some, you know, beautiful encounters in that respect, but I've also had beautiful encounters with people. And that was a big eye-opener, just to see how happy people are, even in the most, you know, what we would call the poor circumstances. They're the happiest people on earth. And they teach you so many things without you realizing it. I mean, during that whole journey, and then, you know, I came back to Africa and I lived there for 18 years. I didn't really take on board everything I was learning, because that was part of my university of life. And it's only later that when you start talking to more people that these lessons, this learnings come out, and you're able to share them in a way that helps people change, you know, stories.
So do you think through?
Go on.
No, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and for the most part, it kind of feels like people don't stop to really kind of digest what's going on in that present moment. Like you said, that whatever happened in their life happened. But then their body or their mind or something is reacting, and they're perhaps, for lack of a better word, they're unable, I was going to use a different word, but unable then to move forward. So I alluded to your website, and on there you have kind of four keys that you talk about in the process. And I would love to have you share that with the listeners.
Yeah, that is, you know, the clear plant nurture harvest system. And I'll explain that in a second. But what you were saying just now reminded me of that well-known phrase, wake up and smell the roses. Mm-hmm. Most of us don't, do we?
No. We
see the flowers maybe in passing, but we don't ever take the time to smell them. And I think it's a very, very wise phrase. So, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And obviously, for me, I mean, nature is very, very special. It's a big part of my life. And clear plant, nurture, harvest is basically going back to the wisdom of farming. We clear the land. We remove the blockages. If there's rocks and stuff like that, we have to take them away. Because if we want to get a good harvest, we need open, clean, fertile soil. So that is the same with us as individuals. We've got lots of blockages. We've got lots of limited thinking in so many ways. I mean, a lot of people, they look back with regret, and that's, you know, we can't change the past, we can only grow from it. So regretting is not a good option. So we're clearing all that away. So that's the clear part. And then once it's clear, we can plant the seed and help it to germinate. And once it germinates, then we need to nurture it, we need to feed it, we need to water it. And life is interesting. It throws lots of different challenges at us. So, again, going back to farming, you'll have insects coming to eat the food. You'll have the crops, rather. You'll have drought, or you'll have heavy rain. You'll have all these things. So we need to be there to look after, to nurture. And it's the same with humans. I mean, if we think we've got rid of every single challenge that we've ever faced in our life, life will come along and say, hey, let's see. And it'll throw something at you again and see whether you can handle it or not. So, you know, we need to be there to nurture and help the people. And obviously the harvest is, it's that time of celebration to recognize how far you've come and enjoy this new person that you've become. And then carry on. Okay, let's find the next seed. Let's have the next direction. Because if you look at a lot of people who set a goal, they've got this goal and they go for it and they go for it, they go for it. They get to the goal and they think, okay, great, that's it now. And they sit back and they celebrate for a little while. But then life becomes meaningless because they've got nothing to aim for. And I think it was Dr. Maxwell Maltz in his book, Psycho-Cybernetics, he said, we're goal-seeking mechanisms. Human beings are goal-seeking mechanisms. We take that goal away. We've got no direction. We stagnate and we go backwards. We go downhill. So the harvest is the celebration. And just like with farming, they prepare the land again and they get the next crop going. And then we continue through that cycle. And it's just natural for me because I'm connected to nature in a way which is meaningful for me.
Beautiful. I love that. Do you think we're coming down on our time here now? So do you think we don't celebrate enough in life?
Definitely. Definitely. We look on things and say that everybody can do that. It's nothing special. I mean, think about walking. Not everybody, but 99% or 90, at least 90% of people can walk. And yet they just take it for granted. Everybody can do that. But that was a phenomenal, phenomenal turning point in your life when you discovered how to walk. And even people who they've had an accident, they would love to be able to walk again. Mm-hmm. But we take it for granted. We dismiss it. Writing, reading, all the things we can do. I think we need to go back in our lives and just write down all the things we've discovered how to do and celebrate every one. And going forward, don't have the view that it's arrogant, it's boastful to celebrate. Have the view that, yeah, recognize what you've accomplished in yourself and give yourself that energy and just go, yes! Or if it's a big thing and you don't want to make a spectacle of yourself in public, go into the restroom, go into your bathroom and just have a jig and just celebrate and really get that energy.
Yeah.
Because it keeps you going forward. But for many people, oh, it's nothing special. Yeah, let me go on. And what are they doing? They're actually deflating themselves. They're not recognizing the true worth and the true abilities. And if we recognize what we've achieved, we know that we can achieve more. And we've got that energy. So, yeah, I agree definitely that we don't celebrate enough. And it doesn't have to be a big thing, but we should make a point of finding ways to celebrate. And even if it's just, yes, it's such a release of energy throughout your whole body.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to celebrate and say, yes, Stuart and I did this interview and there was great nuggets, especially at the end there. Because I do agree that we don't necessarily celebrate the little things and just even, you know, move our body to that. And whether it's, I mean, I get excited every time I go out for a walk with my dogs. I never know what I'm going to find, you know, so that's like a little celebration. Thank you so much. Yeah. Can you just say the name of your website for people, please?
Yeah, you can see my name on the screen. It's Stuart Elliott with two L's, two T's, and Stuart is S-T-U-R. But there's a hyphen between Stuart-Elliott.com, and that's the best place. At the bottom of the page, there's links. There's a calendar for people to get on a conversation with me. And I just like to have these conversations and see how I can help people.
That is wonderful. Thank you again, Stuart, for being here with me, especially if we're like on the opposite sides of the world about. So this is great. So thank you for being part of
today. Well, it's wonderful. It's an honor. And, you know, I'm grateful that the listeners have stayed just to hear my perspective. And hopefully take one little thing from it and move forward and either change their lives or share it with somebody and change their lives. And sharing is what it's about, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, until next time, thank you all for being here on Client Whispers. Bye.
Thank you all. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Client Whispers. Be sure to share this with friends and family. And you can drop me a line, info@leslienace.com, or connect on LinkedIn. And remember, that whisper you hear might just be the inspiration you need for success.
Thank you for enjoying this content by Billionaires in Boxes. If you would like to be a guest or a host, be sure to get in contact with us at billionairesinboxes.com.